Drift is made possible by the generous support of Sierra Sil Joint Formula 14, the patented natural minerals that come with a money-back guarantee. You will feel a difference within 14 days of starting Joint Formula 14 or your money back. Read more in the morning at sierrasil.com. Sierra, like the mountains, and sil.com. Sierra Sil, you've got nothing to lose but the pain. And use the code DRIFT for 10% off. Hello, I'm Erin, and welcome to Drift. I love that you're here in this quiet time in your day to just relax, have some you time, hear a nice story with a happy ending, and then let gentle waves lull you to sleep. Tonight's story is from the Red Fairy book and is written by Madame Dolnoy. It's set once upon a time and is about a young princess on whom there seems to be a curse. But with help from her little green dog, yes, green, she saves her brothers and marries the man of her dreams. We'll get to Princess Rosette in just a moment. But let me first thank Kathy and Kim from Envy Pillow. This two-woman-run Canadian company began on Dragon's Den. The pair turned down their money and have gone on to create products that are gentle to the earth and good for you, with antimicrobial copper and only the finest mulberry silk. I've slept on their unique V-shaped Envy Pillow for years. My friends and family do too. And you can get 10% off your Envy Pillow by using the code GF. That's Envy, E-N-V-Y, pillow.com. And sleep with the best. Before we begin, let us get into a place of deep relaxation together. And it starts with a breath. Just a nice, slow inhale. And exhale. Now let's do it again, counting four on the inhale. One, two, three, four, and a nice slow six on the exhale. One, two, three, four, five, six. Good. Let's focus on the body for a moment, starting down at your feet. Just let them feel heavy on your sofa, in your chair, on the floor, in your bed, where your whole body is sinking into your mattress. Let your legs feel like wet, weighted logs. Make sure you're not holding anything in your hips or belly, and that your shoulders and neck are completely relaxed. No more working, holding up that busy head of yours. As your arms feel comfortable while you rest, let's move to your face. Let your eyebrows drop. Your eyelids feel heavy. Your mouth and jaw completely relaxed. And finally, with one more breath in, let's exhale together now and think these words. I am safe. I am loved. I am at peace. And if you're ready, let's drift. Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen who had two beautiful sons and one little daughter who was so pretty that no one who saw her could help loving her. When it was time for the christening of the princess, the queen, as she always did, sent for all the fairies to be present and afterwards invited them to a splendid banquet. When it was over and they were preparing to leave, the queen said to them, "Don't forget your usual good custom. Tell me, what is going to happen to Princess Rosette?"
"Madam, we fear that Rosette may be the cause of great misfortunes to her brothers, and they may even meet with their death through her. That's all we've been able to foresee. We're very sorry." Then they went away, leaving the queen so sad that the king noticed it and asked her what was the matter. The queen told him about the fairy's prediction, and the king said,
I see no way of saving our sons except by having Rosette locked away while she is still little. The queen cried as her husband had a great tower built as quickly as possible, and there the princess was closed up. The king and queen and her two brothers went to see her daily, so she wouldn't be bored. The eldest brother was called the Great Prince, the second, the Little Prince. They loved their sister dearly, for she was the sweetest, prettiest, kindest princess who was ever seen, and her tiniest little smile was worth more than 100 pieces of gold. When Rosette was 15, the Great Prince went to the king and asked if it would not soon be time for her to be married, and the Little Prince put the same question to the queen. Their majesties were amused at them for thinking of it, but did not reply. Well, soon after, both the king and the queen were taken ill and died on the same day. Everybody was sorry, Rosette especially, and all the bells in the kingdom were tolled. The new king and his brother said to one another, "Now that we are the masters, let us take our sister out of that dull tower which she is so tired of." The tower, which was very high, stood up in a corner. Rosette was busy at her embroidery, but when she saw her brothers, she got up and, taking the king's hand, cried, "Good morning, dear brother. Now that you are king, please take me out of this dull tower, for I am so tired of it." The king kissed her and told her to dry her tears, as that's what they had come for, to take her to their beautiful castle. And the prince showed her the pocketful of sugar plums he had brought for her, and said, "Make haste, and let us get away from this ugly tower. And very soon the king will arrange a grand marriage for you, if it suits you." When Rosette saw the beautiful garden full of fruit and flowers, with green grass and sparkling fountains, she was so astonished that she couldn't say a word, for she had never in her life seen anything like it before. She looked around and ran about gathering fruit and flowers, and her little dog Frisk, who was bright green all over and had but one ear, danced before her, barking happily and turning head over heels in the most enchanting way. All of a sudden, Frisk ran away into a little wood, and the princess was following him, when, to her great delight, she saw a peacock spreading his tail in the sunshine. Rosette thought she had never seen anything so pretty. She could not take her eyes off him, and stood there entranced until the king and the prince came up and asked what was amusing her so much. She showed them the peacock and asked what it was, and they answered it was a bird which sometimes people ate. "What?" said the princess. "Do they dare to kill that beautiful creature and eat it? I declare that I will never marry anyone but the king of the peacocks, and when I am queen, I will take very good care that nobody eats any of my subjects." At this, the king was very much astonished. "But, little sister," he said, "where shall we find the king of the peacocks?" "Oh, wherever you like, sire, but I will never marry anyone else." After this, they took Rosette to the beautiful castle, and the peacock was brought with her, and told to walk about on the terrace outside her windows, so that she might always see him. And then the ladies of the court came to see the princess, and they brought her beautiful presents, dresses and ribbons and baking, diamonds and pearls and dolls and embroidered slippers. And she was so well brought up, and said, "Thank you," so prettily, and was so gracious, that everyone went away delighted with her. Meanwhile, the king and the prince were considering how they should find the king of the peacocks, if there was such a person in the world, and first of all they had a portrait made of the princess, which was so like her that you really would not have been surprised if it had spoken to you. Then they said to her, Since you will not marry anyone but the king of the peacocks, we are going out together into the wide world to search for him. And if we find him for you, we shall be very glad. In the meantime, take good care of our kingdom." Rosette thanked them for all the trouble they were taking on her account and promised to take great care of the kingdom and only to amuse herself by looking at the peacock and making Frisk dance while they were away. So they set out and asked everyone they met, "Do you know the king of the peacocks?" But the answer was always, "No, no." Then they went on and on, so far that no one has ever been farther. At last they came upon a place, and it was easy to guess that they had found what they were searching for, as they saw peacocks in every tree, and their cries could be heard a long way off. When they reached the city, they found it full of men and women who were dressed entirely in peacock feathers, which were evidently thought prettier than anything else. They soon met the king, who was driving about in a beautiful little golden carriage which glittered with diamonds and was drawn at full speed by 12 peacocks. The king and the prince were delighted to see that the king of the peacocks was as handsome as possible. He had curly golden hair, and he wore a crown of peacock feathers. When he saw Rosette's brothers, he knew at once that they were strangers. Stopping his carriage, he sent for them to speak with him. When they had greeted him, they said, "Sire, we have come from very far away to show you a beautiful portrait." With that, they drew from their traveling bag the picture of Rosette. The king looked at it in silence for a long time, but at last he said, "I could not have believed that there was such a beautiful princess in the world." "Indeed, she is really 100 times as pretty as that," said her brothers. "That is the portrait of our sister, the Princess Rosette. We've come to ask if you would like to marry her. She is as good as she is beautiful, and we will give you a bushel of gold pieces for her dowry." "Oh, with all my heart," replied the king, "and I will make her very happy. She shall have whatever she likes, and I shall love her dearly. Only I warn you that if she is not as pretty as you have told me, I will have your heads."
"Oh, certainly, we quite agree to that," said the brothers in one breath.
"Very well, off with you into prison, and stay there until the princess arrives," said the king of the peacocks. Well, the princes were so sure that Rosette was far prettier than her portrait that they went without a complaint. They were very kindly treated, and so they wouldn't feel bored. The king came often to see them. As for Rosette's portrait, that was taken up to the palace, and the king gazed at it day and night. The king and the prince sent a letter to the princess, telling her to pack up all her treasures as quickly as possible and come to them, as the king of the peacocks was waiting to marry her. But they didn't say they were in prison, for fear of making her worry. When Rosette received the letter, she was so delighted that she ran about telling everyone that the king of the peacocks was found, and she was going to marry him. Then she set out, only taking with her her nurse and the nurse's daughter and her little green dog, Frisk. They took a boat and put out to sea, carrying with them the bushel of gold pieces and enough dresses to last the princess 10 years if she wore 2 every day. And they did nothing but laugh and sing. One night, the nurse took the boatman aside and whispered in his ear, "Do you want to make your fortune?" And he said, "Certainly I do." "Tonight, when the princess is asleep, you must help me to throw her into the sea. And when she is drowned, I will put her beautiful clothes upon my daughter, and we will take her to the king of the peacocks, who will be only too glad to marry her. And as your reward, you shall have your boat full of diamonds and gold." The boatman was surprised and said, "But what a pity to drown such a sweet princess." But
At last, the nurse persuaded him to help her, and when the night came and the princess was fast asleep, with Frisk curled up on his own cushion at the foot of her bed, the wicked nurse fetched the boatman and her daughter, and among them they picked up the princess, feather bed, mattress, pillows, blankets, and all, and threw her into the sea without even waking her. Now, luckily, the princess's bed was entirely stuffed with phoenix feathers, which are very rare, and have the property of always floating upon water. So Rosette went on swimming about as if she had been in a boat. After a little while, she began to feel very cold and turned round so often that she woke Frisk, who started up and, having a very good nose, smelt the soles and the herrings so close to him that he began to bark. He barked so loud and so long that he woke all the other fish, who came swimming up round the princess's bed, poking at it with their great heads. As for her, she said to herself, "How our boat does rock upon the water!" The wicked nurse and the boatman, who were by this time quite a long way off, heard Frisk barking and said to each other, "That horrible little animal and his mistress are drinking to our health in seawater now. Let us make haste to land, for we must be quite near the city of the King of the Peacocks." Now the king had sent 100 carriages to meet them, drawn by every kind of strange animal. There were lions, bears, wolves, stags, horses, buffaloes, eagles, and peacocks. The carriage intended for the Princess Rosette had 6 blue monkeys, which could do many charming tricks. Behind the carriage walked 60 beautiful ladies, chosen by the king to wait upon and befriend Rosette. The nurse had taken all the pains imaginable to deck out her daughter. She put on Rosette's prettiest dress and covered her with diamonds from head to foot, but she was so ugly that nothing could make her look nice, and what was worse, she was sulky and ill-tempered and did nothing but grumble all the time. When she stepped from the boat and the escort sent by the King of the Peacocks caught sight of her, they were so surprised they could not say a single word.
"Now then, look alive," cried the false princess. "If you don't bring me something to eat, I will have all your heads."
Then they whispered to one another, "Here's a pretty state of things. She's as wicked as she is ugly. What a bride for our poor king. She certainly was not worth bringing from the other end of the world." But she went on ordering them all about and slapping and pinching everyone she could reach. As the procession was so long, it advanced slowly, and the nurse's daughter sat up in her carriage trying to look like a queen. But the peacocks, who were sitting upon every tree waiting to salute her, when they caught sight of the false bride, could not help crying instead, "Oh, how ugly she is!" Which offended her so much, she said to the guards, "Hurry up and kill all these insolent peacocks who have dared to insult me." But the peacocks only flew away, laughing at her. The rogue of a boatman, who noticed all this, said softly to the nurse, "Oh, this is bad business for us, woman. Your daughter ought to have been prettier." But she answered, "Be quiet, stupid, or you'll spoil everything." Now they told the king that the princess was approaching. "Well," said he, "let us go and meet her." For they knew by the uproar that she had arrived, but could not tell what all the shouting was about. The king thought he could hear the words, "How ugly she is! How ugly she is!" And he fancied they must be referring to some animal the princess had brought with her. It never occurred to them that they could apply to the bride herself. The Princess Rosette's portrait was carried at the head of the procession, and after it walked the king, surrounded by his courtiers. He was so impatient to see the lovely princess, but when he caught sight of the nurse's daughter, he was furious and would not advance another step for she really was ugly enough to have frightened anybody.
"What?"
he cried. "Have the two rascals who are my prisoners dared to play me such a trick as this? Do they propose I should marry this hideous creature? Let her be locked up in my great tower with her nurse and those who brought her here. And as for them, I will have their heads." Meanwhile, the king and the prince, who knew their sister must have arrived, had made themselves smart and sat expecting every minute to be summoned to greet her. So when the jailer came with soldiers and carried them down into a murky black dungeon where they were up to their necks in water, nobody could have been more surprised and dismayed than they were. "Well, this is a dismal kind of wedding," they said. "What can have happened that we should be treated like this? They must mean to kill us." 3 days passed before they heard any news, and then the king of the peacocks came and berated them. "You have called yourself king and prince to try to make me marry your sister, but you are nothing but con men. I mean to make short work of both of you, and the sword is being sharpened that will do away with you." "King of the peacocks," answered the king angrily, "you had better take care what you say. I am as good a king as you, and have a splendid kingdom and robes and crowns and plenty of good red gold to do with what I like. Perhaps you think we have stolen something from you?" At first, the king of the peacocks was surprised by this bold speech, and he had half a mind to send them all away together. But his prime minister declared that it would never do to let such a trick as that pass unpunished. Everybody would laugh at him. So the accusation was drawn up against them that they were impostors, and that they'd promised the king a beautiful princess in marriage, who proved to be an ugly peasant girl. This accusation was read to the prisoners, who cried out that they had spoken the truth, that their sister was a princess more beautiful than the day, and that there was some mystery about all this, which they could not figure out. Therefore, they demanded 7 days in which to prove their innocence. The king of the peacocks was so angry, he would hardly even grant them this favor. But at last, he was persuaded to do so. While all this was going on at court, let us see what had been happening to the real princess. When the day broke, she and Frisk were equally astonished at finding themselves alone upon the sea. No boat, no one to help them. The princess cried until even the fishes were sorry for her. "Alas, the king of the peacocks must have ordered me to be thrown into the sea because he changed his mind and did not want to marry me. How strange, when I should have loved him so much, and we should have been so happy together." And then she cried harder than ever, for she could not help still loving him. So for 2 days they floated up and down the sea, wet and shivering with the cold, and so hungry that when the princess saw some oysters, she caught them, and she and Frisk both ate some, though they didn't like them at all. When night came, the princess was so frightened that she said to Frisk, "Oh, please do keep barking, for fear the fish should come and eat us up." Now it happened that they had floated close into the shore, where a poor old man lived all alone in a little cottage. When he heard Frisk's barking, he thought to himself, "There must have been a shipwreck, for no dogs ever passed that way by chance," and he went out to see if he could be of any use. He soon saw the princess and her dog floating up and down, and Rosette, stretching out her arms to him, cried, "Oh, good old man, do save me, or I shall die of cold and hunger." When he heard her cry out, he was very sorry for her and ran back into his house to fetch a long boat hook. Then he waded into the water up to his chin, and after being nearly drowned once or twice, he at last succeeded in getting hold of the princess's bed and dragging it on shore. Rosette and Frisk were joyful enough to find themselves once more on dry land, and the princess thanked the old man heartily. And then, wrapping herself up in her blankets, she daintily picked her way up to the cottage on her little bare feet. There the old man lighted a fire of straw, and then drew from an old box his wife's dress and shoes, which the princess put on, and thus, roughly clad, looked as charming as possible. And Frisk danced his very best to amuse her. The old man saw that Rosette must be some great lady, for her bed coverings were all of satin and gold. He begged that she would tell him all her history, as she might safely trust him. The princess told him everything, weeping bitterly again at the thought that it was by the king's orders that she had been thrown overboard. "And now, my daughter, what is to be done?" said the old man. "You're a great princess. I have nothing to offer you but old bread and radishes, which will not suit you at all. Shall I go and tell the king of the peacocks that you are here? If he sees you, he will certainly wish to marry you."
"Oh, no," cried Rosette. "He must be wicked, since he tried to drown me. Don't let us tell him, but if you have a little basket, give it to me." The old man gave her a basket, and tying it around Frisk's neck, she said to him, "Go and find the best cooking pot in town, and bring the contents to me." Well, away went Frisk, and as there was no better dinner cooking in all the town than the king's, he cleverly took the cover off the pot and brought all it contained to the princess, who said, "Now, go back to the pantry and bring the best of everything you find there." So Frisk went back and filled his basket with white bread and red wine and every kind of pastry, until it was almost too heavy for him to carry. When the king of the peacocks wanted his dinner, there was nothing in the pot and nothing in the pantry. All the courtiers looked at each other in dismay, and the king was terribly cross. "Oh, well," he said, "if there is no dinner, I cannot dine, but take care that plenty of things are roasted for supper." When evening came, the princess said to Frisk, "Go into town and find the best kitchen and bring me all the nicest morsels that are being roasted upon the spit." Frisk did as he was told, and as he knew of no better kitchen than the king's, he went in softly, and when the cook's back was turned, took everything that was upon the spit. As it happened, it was all done to a turn and looked so good that it made him hungry only to see it. He carried his basket to the princess, who at once sent him back to the pantry to bring all the tarts and sweets that had been prepared for the king's supper. Well, the king wanted his supper early, and when he asked for it, it was all gone, and he had to go to bed half-starved and in a terrible mood. The next day, the same thing happened, and the next, so that for 3 days the king got nothing at all to eat. Because just when the dinner or the supper was ready to be served, it mysteriously disappeared. At last, the prime minister began to be afraid that the king would starve to death. So he resolved to hide himself in some dark corner of the kitchen and watch the cooking pot. His surprise was great when he saw a little green dog with one ear slip softly into the kitchen, uncover the pot, transfer all its contents into his basket, and run off. The prime minister gave chase and tracked him all through the town to the cottage of the good old man. Then he ran back to the king and told him that he had found out where all his dinners and suppers went. The king, who was astonished, said he'd like to go see for himself. So he and the prime minister and a guard of archers set out, arriving just in time to find the old man and the princess finishing his dinner. The king ordered that they should be seized, and Frisk, too. When they were brought back to the palace, the king said,
Today is the last day of the respite granted to those impostors. They shall meet their end at the same time as these stealers of my dinner." Then the old man went down on his knees before the king and begged for time to tell him everything. When he spoke, the king for the first time looked attentively at the princess, because he was sorry to see how she cried. And when he heard the old man say her name was Rosette, and that she had been treacherously thrown into the sea, he leapt for joy 3 times, in spite of being quite weak from hunger, and ran to embrace her, and untied the ropes which bound her with his own hands, declaring that he loved her with all his heart. Messengers were sent to bring the princes out of prison, and they came very sadly, believing they were about to be executed. The nurse and her daughter and the boatman were brought also. As soon as they came in, Rosette ran to embrace her brothers, while the traitors threw themselves down before her, begging for mercy. The peacock king and the princess were so happy that they freely forgave them, and as for the good old man, he was splendidly rewarded and spent the rest of his days in the palace. The king of the peacocks made ample amends to the king and prince for the way in which they had been treated, and did everything in his power to show how sorry he was. The nurse restored to Rosette all her dresses and jewels and the bushel of gold pieces. The wedding was held at once, and they all lived happily ever after. Even Frisk, who enjoyed the greatest luxury and ate as well as a king all the rest of his life. And with that, and thoughts of a happy kingdom, a satisfied good dog, and even a message of forgiveness, I will wish you a good night and sweet dreams.